episode of You Podcast. My name is Austin Burney, and I'm joined by my regular co-host,
Martin Corley.
And this week we're discussing season 3 of Sherlock, and we're doing a review of American Hustle, the new movie by a whole bunch of people, David O. Russell, and probably like the contender of the Oscars, and I think they even won best movie last night on the Golden Globe. So pretty good movie. But let's start with Sherlock. Marty Van, how are you doing?
I'm fine. I have wintered well, and I left the paradise that is sort of streets paved with gold, that's London, and went back home to Plymouth, where everything is a little bit slower, but a little bit more polite. If I say hello to somebody in the street in Plymouth, they don't think I want to knife them like they do in London. that's why.
Is that what people do in like small, like nice villages? Because I grew up in a small village. Nobody ever said hi to me.
Oh, you have no comprehension of how life exists outside of London in this country.
Okay.
As soon as you leave London, just everybody has more time. People are polite. They're a little bit more nosy, but nobody thinks that you're going to knife them if you say hello to them, if you don't know them.
Yeah, well, I'm London based, man. I'm like Sherlock. It's all happening in London for me.
That was my Christmas and New Year, which was good. What have you been up to?
Not much, man. Just relaxing. Just wanted to kind of, you know, it's a good period to just be with the family and friends and not do much, catch up on movies, catch up on television. Like, it's kind of the only time in the year where you have an excuse to just, you know, watch as much TV as you want and stay inside, and B, there's just a lot of movies to catch up on, you know. We've been complaining a lot about how the year was really bad in movies, but I think from September onwards, it's actually gotten quite good. And now with Oscar season, there's all these new movies coming. It's still a shame that we get them quite a bit later than the US does. But I think with Sherlock, they get a taste of their own medicine, where they were all, like, all the American people were complaining about, please don't spoil Sherlock for us. But so, yeah. But just as a note for the listeners, we're going to be spoiling everything. We're going to be spoiling Sherlock. So if you haven't seen it, I would suggest, why haven't you seen it? Like, you should go out and watch this third season now. And if not, then let's get ahead. Let's go ahead. Marty, man, it's the third season of Sherlock. I think before recording, we were thinking that you were saying that you thought this, like, three seasons was the totality of the show, right?
Well, I mean, that was what everybody had been led to believe. Mm. And if you consider that every episode is basically it's a TV movie, every episode. I was perfectly happy with that. Mm. I didn't really have a problem with it, so
it's kind of a weird. So I mean, the writers.
But I think somebody's probably just opened the black box and gone, oh, we can make that much money. Yeah, we need to do more than just like 9 episodes, even if they are an hour and a half each.
Like you just mentioned, it has been confirmed that there's going to be a season 4 and 5, so that's pretty awesome. It's weird because, I mean, season 2 ended on one of the most massive cliffhangers probably ever in television history, right? And it almost felt like a good end because the main villain that we all know of, Sherlock Holmes being Moriarty, who had a 2-season arc, died, and also Sherlock died, but he then also, you see that he didn't die. So, you know, it kind of left it open-ended, but did you feel that episode 1 of season 3, The Empty Hearse, do you think that... they take their time. It's 3 episodes, but they take their time to even film them. I think there was a gap of 1.5 years between season 2 and 3.
Which I imagine is just down to Benedict Cumberbatch being well, and Martin Freeman. I mean, he was obviously filming The Hobbit.
Yeah.
And Benedict Cumberbatch has been around impersonating Julian Assange.
He's in everything, it seems. He's in everything. Like, I was watching the ad we saw yesterday with Meryl Streep wearing a weird wig. Bounty, whatever that was.
Yeah.
He was in that too. He was in Star Trek. So yeah, he's pretty much in everything. And he was in The Hobbit, obviously, where he was squaring off again against Martin Freeman, which is kind of funny. So did you feel that it kind of provided you a satisfying answers to all the questions you had after the end of season two?
I thought it was quite interesting, actually, what they did with that episode, because it was almost like they fed that episode from what people were obviously speculating about.
Yeah, it was a very meta-aware episode.
So it was quite an aware episode, like you say, that, and it was good that they sort of like posited a couple of theories in there, and just sort of like, I guess they just left you to choose which one you wanted to go with. And I'll just go with the one that Sherlock told.
Oh, you didn't like the first one? Where he jumps out the window on a bungee jump and then kisses the girl?
Maybe I've got some sort of credibility problems with that one. No, it was good. It felt more like a slow burn than anything else. I think actually across all of the three, they've been possibly more sedately paced than the previous six episodes, but that's not a criticism, that's just an observation, I think.
Yeah, I think it kind of left you wondering, because, I mean, okay, the big question was always, how did Sherlock survive? And I think they provided you quite a few answers there. And, you know, I think they even mentioned it in the show itself, that it's kind of a magic trick. And once you explain it, it really kind of becomes, you know, like something very regular and maybe not so spectacular. But the other thing that the person that also died was Moriarty, obviously. So season three was the first season where there was no one main antagonist for Sherlock. So that kind of also gave it a different vibe as a season, I feel. Where, you know, like season one and two were leading up towards this final confrontation. Here, it kind of, like, a lot of people I saw on Twitter were almost complaining. And I feel, generally, people have been complaining a lot about season three. I don't know if it's just the expectations of people, or people have been really catching up with the show in the hiatus and are now, like, you know, locked in fans. But I felt a lot of people complaining about Twitter, and one of the things that they mentioned is that this season almost feels like a Moriarty filler until Moriarty comes back. I don't know how I feel about that. Obviously, I mean, it's kind of like, have you read any of the original Arthur Conan Doyle books or not? Or are you aware of some of the storylines, Marty?
I mean, I'm aware of a few of them. I've never read them all, actually. But Sign of Four and Hound of the Baskervilles, you know, all the famous ones.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think anybody that's kind of aware of the books, they would know that Moriarty and both Sherlock would come back eventually, right? I didn't mind it. I didn't have a lot of the same complaints that I felt a lot of people were having, but that usually seems to be the case, that I don't have the same sort of criticisms that that people have. But I do feel that the first episode, I almost felt that Sherlock almost became a superhero. And I mean, I know some would argue that he's an intellectual superhero, but it almost felt like he had actual superpowers. And I don't know if that was something that it's just kind of the mythology of the show has become so much bigger. Like, his mind palace is like an accepted term that everybody's now using, where the last season it was just kind of still new. But here they just go all out, you know. So that somewhere didn't feel right to me. I've always felt that the second episode in the season is always kind of an oddball episode, and I think definitely in season three that was the case. It was a very odd episode, but I liked it a lot. And then, yeah, the third episode is always one of the best of the season. And I think, again, they really delivered on that. What about you? What were your general thoughts about like the entirety of the season and how it fit in with the rest?
I've just said that the first one I thought was a bit of a slow burner, and I think it was, and I think though that was sort of tying up loose ends and sort of explaining things, and then the odd thing was that there's actually something in there that didn't get resolved until the final episode, and even then it didn't get resolved until really quite near the end of the final episode as well. Mm. And it was that they sort of introduced an evil presence, but they didn't resolve who it was or what was going to happen with it or anything else. I thought episode two was a little bit weird.
It's always kind of been a very...
It just seemed to just sort of exist as a... I don't know, it felt like it had to have a mystery plot inserted in it, otherwise it would just be even weirder still without there being a crime to solve. I mean, it was pretty good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's all good. Let's be honest. If we're saying that something is, as much as we can say that something's not that good, what we're saying is it's just not as good as to what we've been used to, or you know, anything
else.
Because
I mean, this is kind of the best television there is, right? I mean, there's nothing. I mean, it's something we anticipate, we wait for, and it has managed to deliver every season, I feel. And I think that's quite a unique kind of phenomenon, because that never really happens. I think everything kind of almost ends up in disappointment, or something weird happens, or the original cast, somebody leaves, or, you know, some of the showrunners get changed. Obviously, you have the advantage that this is the BBC, so there's some sort of consistency and guarantee. But there's no guarantee that... I never knew there were going to be four or five seasons, you know? You never know. There's like... Usually BBC shows are two seasons of six episodes and you're done. So this is quite...
Yeah, I mean, eight if you're lucky. Yeah.
This is quite a different format from that.
It is. I mean, I think you have to sort of applaud them for going for 90 minutes anyway. Straight off the bat, I mean, I think that's very good that they've done that. Just gone straight for 90 minutes. If you think the others, you know, in recent times, the other incarnations. If you look at the one that was Jeremy Brett, and I think it's Edward Hardwick playing Watson, which are being repeated on ITV4 right now. Those are all an hour, I think. So.
But they feel more movie-ish, no? Or am I wrong? Like TV movie, but I guess these are TV movies too, then, right?
The thing that I was trying to look up that I've not been able to find is actually what the budget is per episode or per series. I suspect it's quite high.
I imagine so. Yeah.
So it's it's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've sort of lost the track of what we were talking about, to be fair.
No, let's move on then. So another thing that people talk about a lot is kind of the... How do I say this sensitively? kind of the bromance or subdued homoeroticism between Sherlock and Watson. You know, where to the point that one or the other really gets jealous that, you know, their attention has been taken away. And I think a lot of that was in this episode too.
A lot of that was resolved. A lot of that was resolved, actually.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you... You know, Sherlock sort of comes out for his true personality. Mm. We're doing spoilers, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
I mean, he shoots somebody. He's a murderer. So, so that side of his character truly comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they sort of like reference this sort of druggy past or whatever. But also with Watson as well, the side of his character that he hasn't acknowledged, that also comes out as well in terms of his choice of wife and why he sort of has to be aggressive from time to time and why he goes after these certain things. And so, I think a lot of that sort of, bromance or whatever you want to call it, I think a lot of that was resolved, with the writing in the last couple of episodes.
Yeah, we got to see a lot of background on Sherlock's family, on his past, on his relationship with his brother or brothers, apparently.
Mm.
And it was kind of, again, very meta, very aware of itself, where, you know, like Sherlock's parents are played by actually Benedict Cumberbatch's parents. And I think Martin Freeman's wife was actually playing Mary Watson, wasn't she? I think.
Oh, we didn't know that.
Yeah, I think the actors are married in real life. So yeah, again, meta character of this show made it quite interesting.
Yeah, I just think there was a lot going on. I just think it was also just very well handled. There are a couple of people. I think there's somebody in the Independent, not exclusively, because I think one of their reviewers really loved it. But then somebody else said it was a little bit sort of stupid, almost, or a bit desperate. And I really didn't get an air of desperation at all from it. Yeah, I don't know. I certainly thought that the bad guy was very good.
Yeah,
if you see what I mean.
You mean the Charles Magnus, right? Character, the Rupert Murdoch stand-in.
The foreign press baron. It's Mads Mikkelsen's brother.
Oh, brother! Yeah, I thought maybe his dad or something like that.
No, he looks a lot younger, actually. He looked quite old in this. But if you watched the first series of The Killing...
He's in that?
Yeah. He plays Tols Hartmann in that. So, it was nice to see it. I thought he was very good. Mm. He was sort of, like, suitably creepy and sort of cold and calculating and... and just despicable, basically. So yeah, it was that was good. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Plus, it kind of felt nice that he almost he did get the upper hand on Sherlock for once, right? More than any other villain has ever had.
He did, because he did, and then he very quickly didn't. But yeah.
It was interesting.
I guess because his upper handedness sort of undermined him quite quickly. But
And also, again, like, you know, there's quite a few twists for the audiences and quite a few misdirections there too. Especially like the moment you think that he has some kind of Google Glass contraption going on. All in all, I thought it was an amazing amazing season, amazing episodes, and I think it's just getting it's a show that's getting a lot more sure of itself, and I think that's a good thing. But on the other hand, I don't want it to become cocky either, where I felt there were some moments in the first episode where I felt they were a bit cocky. The writers were. But I think
it's the cockiness I don't mind. I mean, maybe that's just because I'm familiar with Sherlock Holmes. But I think it's more smugness that you need to avoid.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
It's a fine line, right? It's a fine line.
Yeah. I mean, I just hope that... I really just hope that Series 4, Series 5, then they can call it a day.
Yeah.
I'm so wary of these things just being milked beyond what's milkable. So yeah, I just hope things stay consistently high quality and they see it through to the end and leave us with something awesome.
What did you think of the other additions to the cast? Mary Watson, played by Amanda Abington, who is actually married to Martin Freeman's long-term partner. So what did you think of her performance and also the kind of big reveal that happened?
It was completely unexpected. Mm-hmm. But then once it was sort of hinted at, I just sort of ran through it all very quickly and it wasn't a problem. So it's, yeah, so that was good. I sort of liked the way that they, introduced, what's his name? Bob, was it? The
underground the hobo, you mean?
The sort of reformed reformed smackhead.
Yeah. The guy from Benefit Street.
Is that right?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
I don't know what Benefit Street is. I like the way they introduce him. I like the way they give the sort of the other people who's were vaguely sort of like stalking him. They gave those two a bit more credibility as protagonists as well. So
I wonder if that's supposed to be us, like the fans of the show, in a way. Is that a stand-in for us?
Well, I don't know. I mean, in terms of the other guy, they were the Baker Street irregulars.
Oh.
And they were in the books at least. They were his sort of minions on the ground. Mm. They referenced those in a couple of the shows with Jeremy Brett as Holmes. And they sort of those are used primarily as his way of sort of gathering information without alerting people further up. So I guess that was what they were sort of leaning at, but I could be wrong.
Okay. It was just good to see a bit more behind the curtain of how this whole thing works with Sherlock, right? Because he has mentioned the I don't even know what he calls it, the underground network, the homeless network, something like that.
Just to completely nail this, in the original stories, they were urchins who used to help out Sherlock Holmes, and apparently, mm-hmm. I didn't know this until just now, the head of them was called Wiggins.
Mm.
And obviously that's what he said his name was. So
okay.
So that's actually a direct lift from the stories. Mm. So
yeah. I think
so kudos for them to doing it.
I think it's definitely, I think if you have read the books, they add quite a few references in it. But I think it has kind of become its own beast, and I think that's good. That's always a good thing. And I think, in a way, you can almost compare it to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where at the start they were very much beholden to the original source material. But now, you know, it's become its own thing, and it's kind of going the other way around, where the books, the comics are being written like the movies are. And I think with Sherlock, it's the TV show itself, they still keep a lot of references, but they're not scared of doing something completely different. And I think that's necessary to make it interesting, because the books were written quite a while ago, and this is a very modern show. A lot of like flashy photography and a lot of especially the flashbacks and the Mind Palace things, bullet time. They use pretty much every sort of newfangled technique to make it very, very interesting. And I think it's very well made, and it's probably quite expensive too. We didn't find the budget per se, but it looks expensive, right?
I mean, it looks fantastic. Yeah.
Anything you hope that season 4 will have less or more of? I mean, obviously, it's going to be the return of Moriarty. At least that's what the final teaser or the final reveal was. Anything that you want to see less or more of?
Not really. I mean, I think they should just keep going. Just keep going along the same lines. Give me even more about Holmes and Watson. That's it. What I don't want to see is Mary Watson become involved just because we know what her past is. I think we should not. No, I don't really want her to become involved as a special operative or anything like that. She should just be a stay-at-home mum, frankly. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, Moffat and Gatiss are just very good. So they obviously, I'm assuming that they have a goal in mind as to where they want to take it. So take me there, please.
I wonder also if this is going to give us a third Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock movie. Because it seems to every time in the hiatus they drop a movie on us too. which is like, they're like the complete separate thing ever, right? They have nothing in common whatsoever, although it's the same character.
Exactly.
I have to say, I do really enjoy the movies. I think I've made this point. Sometimes I even enjoy him as Sherlock Holmes more than I enjoy him as Iron Man. So I would actually even look forward to the movie in the meantime, because I think the one thing that I can use less of is waiting for the next season to arrive. Because it's going to be, again, like a year and a half to 2 years. And that's a long, long wait to have. So, yeah, I think that's kind of the only thing on my end that I could say. but, yeah, I love the show. And I see a lot of people still complaining and feeling that it maybe wasn't as good as season 2. But I think just the power of the cliffhanger. And also, I really like the... I think season 2 overall was a better rounded season. And
it was more complete.
Yeah, yeah. But that certainly was just kind of why, because it was the completion of this story arc of 2 seasons long, whereas this wasn't necessarily. So I can understand that maybe some people were a bit disappointed, but I really thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm really looking forward to the next season. And yeah, I don't think we want to speculate here on the show on how Moriarty might have survived. But
again, I'm going to have to leave that to the writers. I have no idea.
Yeah, I know I'll be trawling the internet for the next few days to read any possible fan theory, because I just like that stuff. But I know you just kind of stay away from all of that until actually just next season comes, right?
That's because it's all bollocks.
Actually, it was funny because I was reading the comment section of a few things and of Sherlock, and a few things that popped up. But one that I really thought was interesting, one of the final lines that Mycroft says is a Bond reference. And I hadn't even noticed that until I thought about it, is when he says, like, as my colleague said, sometimes we need a blunt instrument. And he's actually his colleague. He's talking about M, and the blunt instrument is obviously James Bond. So that I thought was kind of a cool throwaway line in there, like having a Bond reference in there. So tons of references, tons of things, and yeah, I think it's one of the best shows around. So I'm really looking forward, and I'm quite satisfied with season 3. Anything else you want to say on Sherlock, or should we move on?
No, it's great. Watch it.
If you haven't.
It's pretty simple. It's great. It's really good. Yeah. I just let go and watch it.
Yeah,
okay. If you haven't, it's just excellent.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on to our review of this week, which is American Hustle. So it's written and directed by David O. Russell. It stars Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper, Amy Adams, Jennifer Lawrence, Jeremy Renner, and a little bit of Louis C.K., which was kind of awesome. I didn't see that coming. I didn't know, and I was very happy.
There's even less of Robert De Niro than there is of Louis C.K.
Yeah, yeah. That's like a special appearance, right? Robert De Niro playing Robert De Niro, pretty much, which he does in every other movie. Also shout out to Saeed Tagmawi, from Lion. Had a small little appearance in this movie too. One of my all-time favorite movies, Lion. Every time one of those characters or actors appears in movies or does something cool, I get really excited. He was playing the first Arab sheikh in the movie. So, I mean, it's based on the app scam scandal that happened in the late 70s, where the FBI kind of created this whole plot to get all these corrupt politicians out in the open and kind of convict them. So what did you think of American Hustle? It's been getting rave reviews, right? Do you think it's justified?
I do. I think it's excellent, actually. I think the more that I've thought about it over the last day, over the last 24 hours, it's a damn good movie.
Yeah.
Lots of things that you can talk about for it being excellent. It's just excellent, basically.
Yeah. Have you watched David O. Russell's previous movies that he made? Because he's been really on a streak lately, right? I think he won something for. He had The Fighter with Christian Bale, and then he won the Oscar for Silver Linings Playbook. And
exactly, neither of which I've seen.
Oh, okay.
Somewhat annoyingly, it's really only. I haven't even seen I Heart Huckabees.
Mm.
I have seen Three Kings, although not all of it. Mm. But I knew. I knew his first movie. I think it's Spanking the Monkey.
Yeah,
it is Spanking the Monkey. That I knew of years ago.
Yeah.
Bizarrely, my mum told me about Spanking the Monkey. That sounds
really weird.
Fucking weird. But that was obviously an indie thing and all the rest of it. That was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been around. He's got a pretty decent body of work behind him now as well.
Yeah, especially like the last few movies. I think after I Heart Huckabees, which flopped really bad, and there was this whole scandal about him, like a internet video coming out where he was screaming on his actors and being really rude. He kind of fell off the grid for a bit, and he came back with the Fighter, and since then it almost feels like a trilogy, those three movies, because they almost seem to be playing in the same world of kind of New Jersey-ish or New York-ish. I mean, I'm not good with geography in any case, but it seems to be shot in the same area and all kind of a few years ago, but not too long ago. Also the way it's shot, and I feel... a lot of the writing, it's very strong, like characters, it's a lot of the same actors that's being repeated. like Christian Bale, Jennifer Lawrence, and Bradley Cooper have all worked with him before. So he's really hit his stride lately. And I think American Hustle, I was thinking about it, like, if I think it's better than The Fighter, but it's really good. I mean, if it's not better, it's probably as good, I would say. So, I mean, yeah, let's start with a few of the things that I didn't like about the movie, because overall, I have to say, I really, really loved it. And I have to say, I went in with, like, I think I kind of mentioned that we should go watch this movie, but I still had low expectations. I don't know why. I think just, you know, when a movie gets overhyped, I think it might not be as good, but I think it really did work for me. But the things that didn't work for me are, one, the length of the movie. It's not a long movie per se in terms of minutes, but it just feels very long. And I think somewhere it's just because it lacks focus on what it wants to be. And it focuses so much on the characters that, because it has the backdrop of the AppScam scandal, a lot of times I didn't really figure out, maybe I didn't have enough of the historical context of exactly figuring out what was going on and what it led to. And the moments where it really focused on the relations between Christian Bale, Amy Adams, that was really the key relationship for me in the movie. And there's a whole point in the movie where that relationship isn't important anymore, or they're not really focused on that anymore, and that's where I felt sometimes the movie lost me a little bit. Do you agree with that, Marty, or is that just my personal beef with the movie?
I think some of that's down to the fact that I think the movie's just unbelievably even paced. There aren't really any sort of highs, lows. Yeah. And maybe that's because, I don't know, it felt like it could have gone the way of a sort of like a Casino sort of thing where, you know, mobsters come, mobsters get involved in the plot, and, you know, there were hints of Bradley Cooper's character having a cocaine issue, and there were sort of hints of mob involvement, but ultimately those were very small, minor things, and they add to the fabric of it, but they don't actually they don't take the story forward in that sense. Yeah. So it may be that it's just that massively evenly sort of paced feel. Yeah. Maybe that's why you sort of felt that it was, I mean, let's be honest, it's a good sort of 2 hours 40, is it, something like that? I mean, that's not short. And you know, I have issues with long movies. Not that I can't concentrate on them, but I just don't think a lot of movies that are long should necessarily be long. But if you consider that The Wolf of Wall Street is, that's bang on 3 hours. And a friend of mine has seen that somehow. I don't know how he's seen that, but anyway, he has. And I mean, he's, you know, that's long, and that's Scorsese doing 3 hours. So I don't know. It's, I didn't necessarily have a problem with how long it was. I did find myself at points in the movie just thinking, what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes? Because something somewhere needs to change, or, you know, there needs to be another, you know, sort of, they
something
need to
happen. Yeah. I think that while you were talking, I figured out what kind of bothers me about it in a way. It's very heavily influenced by, you said Casino, but I would say Goodfellas or to a certain degree Boogie Nights. But Boogie Nights was influenced by Goodfellas, so it's kind of a circle. But
Boogie Nights, good call.
Yeah, but what Boogie Nights had was and Goodfellas had these moments of visual flourish, you know. It had and this American Hustle doesn't have that. There's no big hustle scene, you know, where they actually go out and hustle somebody like Ocean's 13 or whatever. That never happens. And I think that's what was lacking maybe in this movie. You know, that one moment, that one key scene that you come out of the theater and you're like, remember that happened? And here in American Hustle, the one key scene I would consider it to be the bathroom scene between Amy Adams and Jennifer Lawrence, which is an amazing piece of acting and an amazing kind of set piece of the movie. But it's not something that, you know, you want to run out and talk to you about your friends with, like, instead of, like, you know, like in Goodfellas, the long shot where he follows him in the club.
There are so many from Goodfellas, it's ridiculous. But I mean, it's interesting you say that, because I think actually one of the best scenes is really right at the very beginning, where we see him doing his hair. That's just an excellent sort of thing to watch.
So the other thing that didn't work for me it took me a while to figure out what Jennifer Lawrence was really doing as an actress, like in this role, because just I feel that there's a huge age gap between, you know, all these actors and Jennifer Lawrence. She's so much younger, and at the start I almost felt that she was too young for the role. But I think I spoke about this after, that she has like a superpower of annoyance, but she's so amazing as an actress and as a performer. She does carry it at the end, and I think she just won a Golden Globe yesterday for it, and I think it's a well-deserved award. She's great, but it took me a while to kind of slot her in and figure out where exactly she was in that movie, because I almost felt she was part of another movie forced into American Hustle.
But I think that was because, I mean, I would say that that's because I think that she was sort of incrementally introduced into the film.
Mm.
So her, you know, the amount that she's on screen, that builds up throughout the movie. So at the first couple of occasions that we see her as Irving's wife, they're pretty short. They're short and sweet. But then obviously once he has the friendship with Jeremy Renner's character and all the other, you know, that sort of like builds and builds and builds and builds. And then at the end, everything is more or less tied up and resolved, and she's happily going off with the one-eyed man from Boardwalk Empire, and
I think what you're saying, she is supposed to be part of another world, another a movie in a way. You know, she is not part of the con world and all that. And I think it really. It does have a point, the feeling that I'm feeling, but it just, you know, kind of, for me, it felt a bit off. The other thing also I felt a bit weird about, and only afterwards thinking about the movie and maybe reading a few reviews, a lot of people were mentioning this, is that the metaphors in the movie are very much on the nose. You know, like the sweet and sour, like sweet with something bit of sour, or everybody's hustling, you know, these kind of things. Like, you know, you curl your hair, I put on an accent, everybody's hustling. So these grand themes were very blatantly explained, where they could have been just left in the background and not, you know, like been a bit more subtle about it. But I think it's a complaint that only I had after I thought about it. So it wasn't like when I came out of the movie, I was really, I loved it pretty much, but when I kind of like was turning around in my mind and nitpicking, those are the 2-3 points that kind of came out for me. Anything that you thought was not as great, or, you know, any points of criticism on American Hustle?
I never actually picked up on the sweet and sour as being, oh, you're one thing, but you're also something else. I never, that sense of duality or whatever you want to call it, that never even crossed my mind about that. the thing that I didn't feel utterly convinced by was the friendship between Irving and Carmine.
Yeah.
I think that was, I mean, obviously he says that, you know, he says that piece at the end of the film, Christian Bale's character, Irving, says, you know, that the thing that I'll never get over, or, you know, however he says it, is that destruction of my friendship with Carmine. But I don't think that was rammed home enough, or not even rammed home, but I don't think that friendship was portrayed forcefully enough or presented well enough for there to be such a gravitas behind it. I didn't think that was translated on screen sufficiently.
I think it was translated that Irving Rosenfeld felt bad for Carmine Polito, and he really thought that he was a good guy. But that sense of friendship, I didn't see it either, and you're right. And I think the movie does that quite a few times, where it suddenly adds these points to the movie without actually building it up. And I think the Bradley Cooper's Cohabit is another one, where he has this intense scene with Amy Adams in her apartment. And he just has turned it up to 11. And I was like, whoa, when did this happen?
Because you don't see him sniffing anything before then.
Yeah. And again, I don't want it to be like super obvious and, you know, like a quick cut montage a la Quentin Tarantino where he's sniffing in the bathroom or something like that. But it did feel jarring when it kind of happened. I was like, whoa, what the hell is happening here? And I think for
Carmine, I mean,
So go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I think with Christian Bale's character, Irving, what I think you can sense all the way through is his growing sense of unease, the way that the whole sort of thing just sort of like snowballs and snowballs and snowballs. And it, you know, he goes from, oh, okay, well, you know, we've wired $2 million to sit in an account for a few days. And then it's just sort of like, you're going after these people, you're doing this, you're doing that, and he's no longer in control. And that, I think, that was the interesting thing for me to see. That he'd had that taken away from him by somebody, actually himself, who was not in control anyway. And I think what I picked up on watching it was that this sort of like growing sense of unease between all of the characters as the movie progressed. Each character was sort of progressively sort of more out of their depth just as everything went on. And then you obviously have that sense of, you know, who's hustling who and all the rest of it. It was so nicely shot as well. I thought the use of lots of sort of like amber colors and things like that, I thought was really good.
Who would you say is the standout performance for you out of these four or five characters?
I'm going to go with Christian Bale.
Yeah. Interesting. It's surprising.
I mean, partly that's just because I'm seeing Batman with a beer belly.
Batman really let himself go.
I mean, Batman really let himself go.
The moment he left the cape behind, he really let himself go.
I mean, he just shouldn't have gone to Italy with
too much pasta, man. Too much carbs.
And Anne Hathaway, she'd be bad for a man's physique. But no, I thought he was good. I mean, I like seeing him in pretty much anything anyway. So
yeah, it's funny because for me, standout performance was really Amy Adams. I think she she has less to play with. She has less of mannerisms, or I mean, she has the accent that she puts on, but I think she does that pretty well. And I think what I liked about it is the moment her accent wasn't great and how that was really played well in the movie itself too. There's moments that it just goes away and you understand that, you know, she's so emotional that she's not able to fake an accent more than anything, right?
Well, the thing that really surprised me at that point was that even though earlier in the film, you know, like Bradley Cooper's characters come out with sort of, oh, I don't know where you're from, whether you're sort of like British or this or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he still hasn't picked up on the fact that she's American until she just comes out with it. Yeah. And that I was really surprised about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of took me aback. I was like, damn, like he really is an idiot.
He is a really idiot.
I mean, yeah, truly. I mean, because his character is not a nice character.
No,
at all.
No, and he's also not good at his job either, necessarily. He's just very, very motivated, but he's not necessarily good at his job.
He's highly motivated and highly misguided.
Yeah, and highly annoying. But yeah, again, he plays it really well, because I find Bradley Cooper to be annoying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Amy Adams also won yesterday at the Golden Globes. So, I mean, I hope that she even wins the Oscar. For me, that was how good this performance was by her. I think she looks great. I mean, like, this period is an iffy period, the disco period. I don't think anybody looks good in it, but I think Amy Adams is the first person that actually made me think, wow, people actually looked sexy dressed like that or with that hair.
Yeah, you're sort of like, damn, some people were actually rocking the 70s.
Yeah, exactly. And it might be just the amount of side boob, under boob, and over boob. But hey.
But no mid boob.
Yeah, no mid boob. Lack of mid boob.
I mean, this is not just a male thing. Well, like, there's lots of boob, but no middle bit.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, for me, she was the standout performer in this movie. And I think she really kind of was the core of everything. Yeah, I really, really liked her performance a lot. And I did like Jennifer Lawrence, too. I think it's very hard for me not to like anything Jennifer Lawrence does. And I think that holds true for most of the internet, because she is kind of the mascot and everybody's favorite at the moment. But yeah, she's great. I think she does a great job. And I think especially that those few scenes where, especially at the latter half of the movie, again with Amy Adams and the final scenes with Christian Bale, I think those are just amazing. And she really kind of comes into this role, and it's a kind of a role that I haven't seen her play yet. So that's really cool too. I think the guys were kind of, I don't know. I feel they were a bit hiding behind their perms and their wigs and their overweight and these mannerisms. So yeah, I think the ladies really did a great job on this one. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. So it won best movie, I think, best motion picture, comedy or musical. It won best female actress, I mean, best actress for Amy Adams, and then it won best supporting actress for Jennifer Lawrence. So three awards last night.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't seen Wolf of Wall Street yet, because it's just coming out next week in the UK. I know that.
Yeah, 17th, I think it comes out, yeah.
Yeah, I know all of the Oscar screeners have already been leaked online. So they're available for download illegally. But I just kind of like seeing it in good print, so I don't want to watch some watermarked screener print. That just annoys the hell out of me, you know. So I'll probably be catching them in theater, and I probably won't be able to watch them before the Oscars come out. But I think it's probably between American Hustle and maybe 12 Years a Slave, right? And that seems to be the
for best movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously Gravity's in there, but I don't see a sci-fi.
It's not going to win.
Yeah.
No.
Captain Phillips is there too, but I think it's really between these three movies, American Hustle, 12 Years a Slave, and Wolf of Wall Street. So Yeah, I wouldn't mind.
I mean, Amy Adams, she's not going to get Best Actress.
No?
No, Cate Blanchett's going to get it.
Right. Oh, Meryl Streep is in there too, right?
She's already got like 19 Best Actress Oscars, right?
I don't think
she's going to get another one. I don't know what it's for. I guess it's for Osage County or something. But
yeah, August Osage County. That's the name of the movie.
Yeah.
It just annoyed the crap out of me when I saw that trailer. It wasn't for me at all.
But yeah, it'll be. I would imagine. I'm not a gambling man. I'm actually not. I don't know. Cate Blanchett is mighty fine in that film. So
yeah. You've seen it. That's why you're probably also just.
I can say just how brilliant she is in that. So
you've reviewed it on the site, so people, if they want to check out your review of Blue Jasmine, it's on your podcast.
Yeah, that's up.
So yeah, getting back to American Hustle. Anything else you want, points you want to talk about, or anything else that I forgot?
No, I mean, I wasn't aware of the roots that it had in reality. Mm-hmm. That was quite interesting. Mm. But no, I also think the soundtrack is pretty strong as well.
Yeah, I agree.
I enjoyed. God, I can't even remember now. But I know you've got the cover version of Dear Prudence. You've got, which is just fantastic. I'm glad that's getting a decent airing and what will hopefully be a very, very popular film that loads of people will see. Soundtrack's really good. I think it, like, the vibe of the whole thing is just nice. Mm. Without it being sort of like over the top, let's make it look like it's 1978. But it's just good. I like the more I go back and sort of like think about it in my head, the more I actually want to go and see it again.
Yeah. I think you should really check out his previous movies. I think you'd really like them. I think The Fighter is even on Netflix, if I'm not wrong. Silver Linings Playbook is really good too. I think they all kind of play in that same cinematic universe, I feel. And I think if you watch them, you'll probably agree with me that there's definitely a kind of a same vibe to the three of them. I think both of us really like the movie generally. So. I think that's it from us for this episode, right? I don't think we have anything else to add.
No, not really. I'm looking forward. I mean, if I've got any resolutions this year, cinematically, it's just going to be to see more normal releases it was great seeing a load of gothic stuff at the BFI, and that's really opened my mind to a load of stuff. And catching up on a load of other movies that I hadn't actually seen. But no, I think this year, it's just, I feel like I'll be seeing more normal releases.
I think that would be good. Just to wash down that crazy gothic adventure that you just had. So
it was about 45 movies that were all sort of like gothic or horror.
So I think definitely whatever we watch, we'll probably be talking about it on You Podcast. So people, if you want to listen to our shows, just go to youpodcasting.com, drop us an email at youpodcasting@gmail.com, follow us on Twitter or on Facebook, or you can catch all the episodes on iTunes if you subscribe. Marty man, people can follow you where?
Yeah, I'm just at Martin Cawley on Twitter.
Great, and I'm at Austin Burney on Twitter. Thanks for listening, guys. It was awesome, and hopefully we can get Ahmed back for another show. I don't know when that is.
We need him back.
We'll try to get him back soon.
We need the third wheel.
We need the third. Thanks for listening, guys.